Had another great thing that happened yesterday, kind of an impromptu grassroots meeting that took place in the park in Libby Bowl, and it was really trying to address, it just started with people conversing on Ojai, what's it, I forget, one of the Facebook pages, Ojai Connection or something like that, Community Connection. And it was addressing, you know, in particular, the awesome amount of drug overdoses in the valley, and the drug, particularly the heroin overdoses. And I've done so many funerals here regarding overdoses. And there was just an overdose in one of our of a young person in one of our public bathrooms a couple of days ago. A person died, and it's an ongoing thing. And so this thing started up, and we just said, well, why don't we just meet in the park? And Sunday Rylander, whose son, Elin, is a former addict and now in recovery, wanted to speak. And so we said, we'll just meet by the bandstand in Libby Park. And we had this amazing crowd. And Brenton showed up, and Sharon and other people. And there was this great sharing and trying to simply meet together. And I had a little bit of an opportunity to give it some format to talk about maybe three things that this could do, which is, number one, address some of the preventative things. How can we prevent some of this? And that's a pretty huge issue, obviously, for our young people in this valley. And I think today's message even addresses it. Because for so many of the young people there that we're sharing, and this is not in any way, shape, or form, this is just life, right? It's just life. It happens. But so many of the kids that we heard, at least yesterday, who slid into abuse, started off with depression, despair, conflict. Often their homes were homes where there was just a lot of conflict. You know, husband, wife, fighting, divorce, other things. And I tried to address that, is that in our world today, we look at young people and we don't really realize how much pressure is on them. It's easy to say they got it easy, they got it this, they got it that. But if you really sit down with young people and you listen to them and you spend time with them, I have four. I have one college graduate. I have one that's deep in college. I got one that's a high school senior and one that's a high school freshman. And I listen and I talk and I listen to their friends. And their friends are over at my house all the time and we get to talk. There's a lot of pressure out there, man. Academically, it's huge. And I know some people kind of like, oh, Paul, you know, you're always undercutting education. Yes. But primarily because I try to be at least a voice to offset it, because all my kids have gone through the high school. I've met with all the counselors. I've been to all the orientation programs. And basically what most young people hear is, if you don't have it figured out and you're not on the four-year college track by the age of 14 or 15, your whole life is going to be crap. You know, that's basically what they're told. Like, the pressure is just upon them. And then you got the financial pressures of college, all those things, which is not easy to do for a lot of families. And it's absolutely not true. I'm all about education and going for education, like my kids so far have chosen to go to college, and I've supported that, and I love that, and I do what I got to do to make ends meet. But I know plenty of my peers and friends and through the years that have had amazing, successful, wonderful, fulfilled lives, just being good human beings and doing good things in the world and even living simply. And so that's one of the big pressures you hear. And then you look at our country's climate. In our country, and I'm not picking on a side, it's the way we do it here. I mean, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, all you hear is horrific messages about one or the other. That's all that there ever is. You go to an election year, all you hear is doom and gloom. The environment, global warming, the world's coming to an end, terrorism, there's a terrorist under every rock, your life is threatened, the economy, we are strung out and it's going to collapse, there's no jobs, it's just constant one side telling the other side how horrible it is, and it's all your fault, and if we continue this way, and then you throw religion in, you know, which is kind of my department, which is just full of judgment, division, hate, exclusivity, and then throw in a little hell. And then if you don't belong to our particular brand, you're all going to be in eternity roasting in fire. I mean, and then you wonder why a kid grabs a bong. Makes complete sense to me. Frickin' torch it. Light up. Let's sit around. Screw it. It really doesn't matter. Because listen to what all the grown-ups are talking about. It's all crap out there. We have to address that aspect. We have to address in the preventative end, not just saying no to drugs, but saying yes to something else. And yes to beauty and life and compassion and character and community and caring. These are the things that you know, I often scratch my head and I wonder, why am I a pastor? What difference does it make in the world that when we gather together and we meet and we talk about things like love and faith and forgiveness and hope and compassion. And I'm thinking like, yeah, the freaking world needs to hear that message. It needs a lot of people. It leads a lot more people that are believing in that, and particularly in the religious things. Like I say, my corner of it in religion is horrific, in my opinion. You look at what's happening in the world in the name of religion. It's astounding. Whether it's Boko Haram, you know, with the kidnapping of children, whether it's the Palestinians and the Jews, blaming, shooting, killing, bombing, you know, a four-year-old. Little boy at a kibbutz was killed this past week in Israel. At the same time, well, that's the third casualty on the Israeli side of civilians. You know, about 2,000 have been killed in Gaza, and 70% plus of them have been men, women, and children that have nothing to do with the conflict. They're just collateral damage. You got Syria, the crisis, 190,000 people in that conflict and civil war have died. It's spilling over into Iraq, and we all know about ISIS, right? We know these things. It's terrible. I mean, beheading of children in Mosul, just the eradication of genocide of Christians and other ethnic groups in Iraq. You look at that stuff, and it's all guised in religion and being right and having the right religion. You got Christians that are literally frothing at the mouth right now with excitement about what's happening in the Middle East. They actually get giddy, because for them it's all about the return of Jesus. And like I said last week or the week before, I don't know why they get so excited, because they apparently did not care a thing about what he said the first time he was here. So, but they're all excited. And then it's not just exclusively religion. I mean, you look at Putin, the Ukraine amassing a 777 was shot out of the sky, you know? And the world is so bad right now, it's just, we forget it so fast because there's just so much other crap that's happening. And or North Korea, the Pope just visited South Korea. What did North Korea do? Launched a bunch of missiles. You know, you're like, what is up, you know? And yeah, it's bad out there. I get that. And we don't have to lie to the kids. What we need to do is inspire them. You know, give them a mission and give them a purpose of making the world a better place. And that's what I hope to do with our small gathering of people and our time together with my particular facet of religion. So we gathered there. We talked about, you know, what kids are growing up with. We talked about the kids that are in the midst of it and trying to get resources to them. It's one of my hardest, most challenging things is families come to me desperate for help with their kids that are already in the tornado of addiction and what it's doing to the family. And just being able to talk to them. You know, I remember when my sister was deep in her alcoholism and second divorce and the disruption and the chaos that was taking place in our home. And I said yesterday, I remember, and I love my sister, praying specifically to God to kill her. Just take her out. I can't watch what she's doing to my mom, to my dad, to her husband in the divorce, to her son, and to herself. I just can't take it anymore. Can she just not die? And just being able to talk about that transparently and have other parents go like, I've had that thought and I hate myself for it. No, 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 no. It's completely normal. You're not weird. You're not a bad parent. You're just desperate and hurting. And I know. And just to be able to talk to people about that in the tournament and connect them to others, you know, so, and give them the resources, which is tough because there's just not a lot Our healthcare system does not care about mental health. Our healthcare system does not care about the problem of addiction, and they address it with incarceration, and it's not working. We have more people in prison in the United States than any other country in the world. Yes, that includes communist China with 1 billion people, and India with 1 billion people. We have more incarcerated, and that's how we handle the drug issue. And the people that want help, that need rehabilitation, that need mental health services, guess what I got for them? A goose egg. So we're addressing these issues, and we're talking about how it, because sometimes somebody just needs to talk to somebody. And that's why I'm thankful for all of you, as I've said before. One of the things that this community allows me to do, it empowers me financially to do what I do, to meet with people, sit with families, to bury their dead, and not charge them a penny. All right? I don't have to ask them for money when they come in to unload and tell me about what they're going through or what their kid's going through, if their kid wants to come and meet with me. So there's a lot of tough stuff out there. But for me, that's opportunity to do what we are to be doing as human beings, first and foremost. I don't care who you are, what your religion or your... We're human. We're human. And in my particular faith tradition and following Jesus, there's a purpose and a reason why I'm here. There's a reason that I'm in the world. There's a reason that we gather together and we talk about this stuff. It's not just to play a religion. And I know you guys aren't like that. I know that. I'm not saying that to you. But I'm just saying this world needs some people who are going to step up and stand out. I think about in our own country recently, you look at what's taking place in Ferguson. And in our own country, just being able to sit down with people and talk to them about race and race issues in America that many people want to like pretend it's not there. But it's there. And Jared, if I can get the YouTube clip, can we play that for a second? I got a guy, he's a comedian. He's a little rough around the edges, and that's probably why I like him. But he, they bleep him when he cusses. But he's talking a little bit about race, and he puts a fun twist on it because he's a good comedian. And he's on Jay Leno, and he's going to talk a little bit about kind of like what it's like for us people, predominantly white people in America, and he's talking about his kids. So turn the volume up good, Jared, and let's just watch this. It's only about a minute and a half.
How are they?
My kids are good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they can't, on paper, they're great. They're two little white girls in America.
Right, right.
I mean, what? Yeah. Sometimes I look at it that way. I look at them, I'm like, you can't say anything.
Yeah.
You're doing awesome.
Right.
Just boilerplate, great lives. I gave my daughter medicine the other day, and it was bubblegum flavored, so that she'll take it.
Bubblegum flavored medicine?
Yeah, you give me like Tylenol, it's bubblegum flavored.
Oh, it's not methadone or anything.
No, it's bubblegum flavored. I give her, she's got a fever, Tylenol, bubblegum flavored, and she goes, ew. I'm like, you, ew. You can't say ew. I'm sorry. It's medicine.
It's medicine, right, exactly.
It's medicine. Most children don't have medicine. Right. Most children in the world, they get sick, they die on a rock with a bear eating them. That's how they handle it.
Right.
And, oh, he's got a sniffle, ring the bear bell and put him outside, whatever they do. You're a little white girl in America. You wear clothes made by children your age professionally. You don't get to say, ew, about your bubblegum medicine.
I never heard of bubblegum medicine. Well, right. You got the holidays coming up. Are you doing any plans?
No,
you seem like a very holiday guy.
I just want to say I'm not trying to say that if you're white, you can't complain.
Right.
I'm just saying that if you're black, you get to complain more.
Right.
Because you can't. There you go.
Don't tell the band that.
You can't take people's like historical context away from them. And right. Everybody wants us to. Like white people are always like, come on, it wasn't us. Like they want black people to forget everything. Like every year, white people add 100 years to how long ago slavery was. Yeah. I've heard educated white people say slavery was 400 years ago.
No, it very wasn't.
It was 140 years ago. That's two 70-year-old ladies living and dying back to back. That's how recently you could buy a guy.
That's right.
And it's not like slavery ended and then everything has been amazing. Like it just...
Oh, glad that's over.
Oh, yeah, it just ended like a clean... where you don't have to wipe. Just boom. And then it's just been parades and presents ever since. You gotta remember that if you meet a black person, they have gray hair, they remember a time they weren't allowed to use a certain toilet. So give them a little, you know, time to be cranky. And by the way, white people have our own thing that we, stuff that we went through. That hurt us, that we have to cope with. Like when they took our slaves away. That was really hard for us. And we're still... So it's pretty even.
So it's even.
Yeah.
It's even. It's
all right, even.
White Pie with Aaron Ralston. Louis C.K.
I love how he can take humor and also blistering commentary. And like I say, all I'm trying to say is that there needs to be an understanding of narrative. It doesn't mean you have to agree. It doesn't mean you can't have an opposing viewpoint. It just means we've got to do it better, particularly when it comes to the race issue in America, and especially as a Christian. Jared, throw up that one picture. This is not that long ago, this picture, and it's startling. I know it's tough, but you know, this is not that long ago. And you've got white men, women, kids, teenagers getting in the picture for, hey, look, we just lynched two blacks. Take a picture. Pose. Kids, come over here. Come on, check this out. We want to be in the family pic. And we'd like to forget that. We'd like to pretend that never happened. It was so long ago, it disconnects us from today. But that is not the reality. The reality is that's not that long ago. And while many of us in white privilege like to forget that, if you're black, it's a little harder. And that doesn't make violence, it doesn't make revenge right. In fact, Jesus tells us there's a whole different way to address the injustices in the world. But we've got to find a way to understand and listen to other people's stories and existence. This is the thing. I mean, I can't believe it. And every time I try, it's amazing. Like just with the Palestinian thing. Just when I'm on Facebook and I try to say something about, there's another side to the story. You can't, oh, you're a Hamas lover, you're a Quran lover, you're an Antichrist, you're not Jesus, you're a false teacher, I mean, it's just like, oh my God, you know, seriously? You know, this is not the way we solve problems in the world or that Jesus calls us to do or be. So I want to talk a little bit this morning about peacemaking, a little bit about how can we be better peacemakers. Because I'm going to tell you right now, the world needs them. The world needs us at any level and every level to be peacemakers. That's not to be peace lovers. That's easy. Anybody can be a peace lover. I'm a peace lover. Oh, yeah, well, me too. That's a good thing. I mean, I love peace. That's a good thing. But I'm talking about how to be a peacemaker. Somebody who is learning the art of making peace. Somebody who is learning the craft, who's doing the hard work of building bridges of understanding, of compassion, of empathy. And that doesn't mean that you have to agree with everything and everyone. It doesn't mean that, you know, it just means when we understand, we can have compassion and dialogue. We can have reconciliation of relationship, which is the first step at the human level before we get to the other problems. Everybody wants to step right over being human and go right to their particular viewpoint on the problem. Yeah. In America, for instance, immigration. Everybody just wants to, they either got one side or the other. They step over the human aspect and go right into, well, we need stronger borders, or we need to have them wide open, or whatever. They just go right in and begin the personal attacks. And for reconciliation to happen and restoration, there has to be certain steps that we got to go through. And I want to talk about those this week and maybe next week. I think one of the things to being a great peacemaker, and I want to show this week. I guess I could do it next week. And I'm not trying to video you to death. But I'll introduce the concept here. And we're going to watch one more Pneuma vid. We've kind of had a fun summer. The summer of Pneuma, you know, I call it. Pulled out a lot of these Rob Bell videos. And this one is a good one. It's just simply called Corner. It's only about 10 minutes. But I think if we just listen to this, and then I can give you some thoughts, some questions, maybe some ideas before we walk out of here. We take a big step to changing our life and our world. I mean, in our world, I mean, literally. I'm not trying to do a sales job here. Here's the deal. The deal is often if we start right here, you know, before we jump out there to try to fix things, but we start right here, then those things fall into place, or we have a better opportunity, and we begin to experience the peace and shalom in our own lives that we want so desperately for the world. So let's roll the Pneuma. Jared, thank you, buddy. Pneuma.
My grandmother gave me a chair, an old, squeaky, upholstered chair with red and blue flowers all over it. And I was so grateful. I mean, it was the only piece of furniture that I owned. I loved that chair. I would read in that chair. I would fall asleep in that chair. I would talk on the phone in that chair. I even called it the power chair because I believed that I got power when I sat in it, which sounds totally ridiculous now because it's somewhere in the basement and I just don't sit in it that much anymore. And when my wife and I were first married, we barely had any money. We had a tight budget. I distinctly remember we'd be out with a group of people and someone would say, "Let's go eat." And we would look at each other with this look like, "Are they paying? Because if they're not paying, then we can't go. We can't afford it." But if we stuck to our budget and we had no unexpected expenses, then we could afford to eat out once a month. I mean, I remember going to the restaurant and getting a table and ordering something, and we would savor every detail of the experience. I mean, so filled with gratitude for the gift of eating out, which now it's just, you know, it's just not that big of a deal. And so over the years, we've accumulated more and nicer furniture, and we've eaten in some nice restaurants. And yet it's also possible to lose something along the way. The overwhelming gratitude of those first experiences. I mean, that acute, ever-present awareness that this is all a gift. I was talking with some people who just returned from a trip overseas, and they could not stop talking about the people that they met, people that we would describe, you know, as poor, and yet they were struck with how filled with joy and peace these people were. They said, you know, at first they felt uncomfortable, you know, because we have so much and they have so little, but after a while they started to wonder if in fact they weren't the ones who were actually poor. And so they said we went to do a good work for them, and yet we returned realizing that we received more than we ever gave. Success can be dangerous, can it? We get everything we wanted, only to discover that we're missing something that we had before. In the book of Deuteronomy, the great prophet Moses is teaching the Israelites the way of God. And at one point he says to them, when you're in your field harvesting your crop and you overlook a sheaf, don't go back and get it, but leave it for the widow, the orphan, and the immigrant, so that the Lord your God will bless all the work of your hands. So the instruction is essentially this. Let's say you're a farmer and you've got this field and you're out harvesting your crop and you miss something on the first pass. Don't go back and get it, but leave it. Leave that edge or leave that corner for someone who really needs it. And then the instructions continue. And when you're beating your olive tree, don't go back over the branches a second time, but leave the olives that you didn't get on the first pass for the widow, the orphan, and the immigrant. And when you're harvesting your grapes, don't go back over the vines a second time, but leave the grapes that remain for the widow, the orphan, and the immigrant. Now, wait. Imagine that you own the vineyard. Imagine that this is how you make your living. And you spend all this time trimming and pruning, and you make sure that the grapes are healthy, and you make sure that the vines have enough water, and you spend all this time preparing for the harvest, and now you're told that whatever grapes that you can't get on the first pass, whatever you miss, you have to leave for somebody who hasn't done all the work that you've done. That's not fair. Why should somebody who hasn't done all the work that I've done come on to my land and take my grapes, my olives, my grain that I missed on the first pass? But the teaching isn't over. It ends with this line: remember that you were slaves in Egypt. That is why I command you to do this. You see, these people were slaves in Egypt, and they were rescued and released from slavery. This is a major moment in the Bible. God has heard the cry of these oppressed slaves in misery in Egypt, and God has liberated them. And it's to these poor, wandering, former slaves in the desert that the instructions are given about what to do with the grapes, the grain, and the olives that they don't have. You see what Moses is doing here? Moses is essentially saying to these poor, wandering, former slaves in the wilderness, it's not always going to be like this. Someday, you're going to arrive in your new land, and you're going to build houses, and you're going to settle down, and you're going to have crops, and you're going to harvest them. Someday, you're going to be successful. And the danger is that you're going to forget Egypt. You're going to forget what it was like to be set free. The danger is that you're going to forget what it was like to experience liberation. I mean, it isn't fair. I mean, it's my vineyard. It's my olive grove. It's my field. Why should I let these people come on to my property and take what I worked so hard to produce? That's not fair. Exactly, because being rescued from slavery in Egypt wasn't fair. Liberation isn't fair. Redemption isn't fair. Grace isn't fair. God isn't fair. I mean, is this passage in Deuteronomy about grapes and grain and olives, is this a series of commands, or are these warnings? Warnings about what happens when you lose your sense of appreciation and gratitude for what you've been given. When we leave a corner, when we empower others, when we extend grace to others in their oppression, whatever that may look like, we find out about the grace that God has extended to us. So when Jesus talks about taking water to those who are thirsty, it isn't just about the necessity of getting water to those who need it. It's about us being constantly reminded of the gift of water we've had all along. Now, there's a slight chance that this might possibly, for some people, have something to do with either giving money away or spending it differently. But this is ultimately about the far larger truth that if we each don't find some suffering and do something about it, we may become miserable. Our achievement, our education, our wealth, our time, and our money, they'll turn on us if we don't spread them around. We leave a corner because in helping save someone else from suffering, we may in the process find ourselves being saved from indifference, from the inertia of inaction, from taking what we have for granted. We leave a corner because our world is either shrinking or it's expanding. It's either contracting in on itself or it's opening up. Our lives are either more and more about us, more stuff, more unsatisfying consumption, or we're on a different path. And this is why Jesus talked so much about serving. It wasn't so that we'd have these incredibly heavy burdens of, oh, I guess I'm supposed to help. It's about keeping your own story alive. It's about never forgetting just what you've been given. So may you come to see that grace isn't fair. Redemption isn't fair. Liberation isn't fair. And may you extend this unfairness to others, finding out that your overflow is somebody else's necessity. May you find somebody who needs what you have, only to discover that they had what you needed all along.
That's rich. That is really good. So, some thoughts before we pick this theme up again next week. That is your world expanding or contracting? Where does the mindset of mine invade? See, there's a healthy, a very good thing that comes from hard work, self-esteem, doing and creating and paying your dues and doing those things and working hard and earning, all that is good stuff. The problem is that on the way we often will arrive and then forget. And that's basically the thing that in the Old Testament, at least on those portions that God is trying to say through Moses to the people, like, don't forget. Don't, you know, we know that, right? We know that theme. We say that to people as they're going up. Don't forget where you came from, you know? And it's easy to forget. I have this with, you know, friends of mine who are leaders in the Black community and or who will say, gosh, you know, we get some people that are really successful and then they just forget. They just, you know, and a lot of times they'll even turn. Then it'll be like, hey, we're, you know, I did it on my own, no handouts. And you're like, whoa, 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 time out, time out. You didn't do it on your own. People got the crap beat out of them. Dogs were sicked on them. Fire hoses, beatings, lynchings took place. People stepped out and gave it all to push the movement forward. And now you're acting because, like, that's worked for you? That you can, you know, and I get that. And that's true of anybody. Not just a Black community, it's true of anybody. anybody. And in no way, shape, or form I'm trying to excuse violence or laziness or those things. That's not the point. But we're talking about systemic things. And for us to be peacemakers in the world, we have to have hearts filled with gratitude. Because gratitude, when you forget, that's when you become ungrateful. And that's what I love, what Rob puts that little twist on. He's saying, is this a command or is it a warning? Like, dude, if you forget to be grateful, if you forget, you're setting your own life up for misery. There's always this genius to Jesus' teachings. It's like this genius of like what we do or he calls us to do affects others, but what we forget, it hugely, and most maybe in his own mind because he loves us, most importantly, it affects us. So when Jesus tells me to forgive somebody, when I can finally muster up the energy to do it, I find I'm the one that's released. When we gather a bunch of people and we go down to Mexico and we build a home, we think we're doing something for them, and yet how many testimonies do I hear of the people that come back go like, oh, wow, that just shifted everything for me. Yeah. How many times have I gone overseas and been in other places and just come back from that and just gone like, wow. And if you're feeling guilty, it's going the wrong direction. This is not about guilt. This is not about pouring on guilt. It's about gratefulness. And grateful people are not heavy laden with guilt. They're just flipping happy. We're thankful for the little things. And many of us have those stories. I think of Kathy and I when we were first married and had that little studio, you know, up in Alameda on the bay. Just this, I don't think it was like 300 feet. It was like a bed with a TV and the kitchen was right here. You could reach over, you know, and at this tiny patio, and we were snug as a bug on the rug, and we often look back at those days and go like, God, they were just so great. Could not have gotten any simpler and yet been more fulfilling. And then we get and we accumulate, and there's nothing wrong with getting and accumulate. This is not the guilt trip. This is not about guilt. Those are great. Those are fun. The problem is sometimes we just forget. And God doesn't want us to forget because he's like, if you forget, you're hurting yourself. Your world is not expanding, it's contracting. It's all about me, mine. Most fights are about what's mine. Mine, 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 mine. You know? I get really irritated. Kathy busts me on this all the time. When people park in front of my house. I swear to God. It's like, whose car is this? I'll do like the whole circle around. Who's parking in front of my house? I'll look inside. And she's like, it's a public street. Yeah, but this is my house. This is for me. I don't park, you know, and right away, I don't care. Israel, Palestine, it's always about whose land is it? Now, I love the concept biblically that the land doesn't belong to anybody. It's everybody's. And yet world history, we're far from alone. I know world history. I'm absorbed in it. I love studying world history. Because, you know, they say, what do they say? If you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. And if you know history, you're doomed to simply standing by and watching it be repeated. That's the tough part. It doesn't always make that much of a difference. It can actually be more frustrating. But it's true. I mean, so peacemakers are what? That's what I kind of want to talk about. We're going to take it into next week. We're going to talk about, well, how do we do that better? How does that start in my own house and my home? How do I find gratitude? Yes, hard work is awesome. It's still grace. Because your achievement and a massive stroke that leaves you in a hospital babbling to yourself and having a nurse feed you applesauce is a mystery. I have a friend that's been married a few years and has a 2-year-old, and his wife is 29. And just a couple of days ago, she suffered a series of massive heart attacks out of nowhere. She survived them to this point. They couldn't stop the heart. They had to keep restarting. Thankfully, her, at this point, as far as we know, not suffered debilitating brain damage. She's at Cedars-Sinai, and they did surgery on her and had to put a mechanical heart in because the heart is trashed. And now she's in Cedars with a mechanical heart waiting for a heart transplant. 29 years old. I mean, stuff happens, and it happens out of nowhere. So listen, I'm all about hard work. I'm all about achieving. I, as an athlete, achieved some stuff in my career. I achieved it. I was an All-American Division I at UCLA and won Rose Bowl championships. And that was hard work. I didn't walk off the bus at 6'4", 260, running 4'4". I was very average and had to work hard. I'm very proud of that. But I also really realized that, my God, my career, one guy in your knee, and it's over. It's done. That's just an edge. It's gratitude. I'm very grateful. I'm very thankful to have had the career that I had. I do not think I'm so much better than everybody else. I work so much. You know, and if I can help a kid along the way, I'd like to do that. I'd like to give back. And every time I do, whether it's the Skylar Logstons or anybody else that I've spent time with and invested time, it's always come back tenfold. So this is just how to live. This is how to be human. I understand the great debates about immigration. I do. But first and foremost, let us not leapfrog over the fact we're talking about human beings. How can we address this in a human fashion? I get Israel's right to exist. I get that. I want that. And I get the Palestinians' desire to be free. And this means that sometimes we have to own stuff. We have to own it. Doesn't mean we have to walk in total guilt all the time. It does mean, however, to reconcile, we got to own it. I'm very privileged to be born in this country, my parents immigrating here. Very privileged to be successful in this country. And yet I realize my success is still built upon the privileges that I have, and some of those privileges are here today because of very dark and horrific wrongs and injustices that were done. It's still not a time I don't drive by an Indian reservation. I'm just telling you that I don't think that's really weird. Why are there Indian reservations, Dad?
Yeah.
Because they were savages and we wore the white hat and manifest destiny.
No.
Genocide. And this is true. Doesn't mean that I did it. I get that. I'm just saying, but those are still human beings. How can we reconcile? How can we make first at the relationship and then address other issues that come along?
I said to you a few weeks ago, Palestinian two-state solution.
Ain't gonna work. I am not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to say the truth is, if Israel really wants, I mean, the truth is, for both sides, for Arab Jew, Palestinian Jew, for Muslim Christian Jew, in that, there's a one-state solution, and that's that everybody sees each other as human beings and lives together peaceably. That's the solution. Now, I know right away people are going to want to jump in and go, oh, you can't trust those Muslims. Oh, you can't trust those Jews. You can't. Yeah, but we forget the human aspect. So regardless, this is what Jesus calls us to do and to be. And in the end, when he calls us, he says, this is the priority he puts on it. Be peacemakers, because if you're a peacemaker, you will be known as a child of God. Wow. And you will be blessed. Blessed are the peacemakers. They are the children, the offspring of God. And being a peacemaker is hard work. And it starts in our own lives. And it starts in our own relationships. And it spills out everywhere. And it's not easy. And we are all flawed human beings. Okay? It's not natural. Jesus calls us to something supernatural, above and beyond the natural. Because the natural in me is to walk around the car and go, you know, instead of the gracious, oh, yeah, sure, that's fine. The natural in me is more disruptive than it is naturally for me to be a peacemaker. Even when I want to do the just thing, even when I want to do the right thing. So we're going to talk about this next week. This is part of our calling, part of who we are. And I don't care if you believe in God, don't believe in God. I don't care if you're a Buddhist, a Muslim, you believe in Bruce Lee. At the end of the day, we have to live together and we have to learn how to be human together. And in my particular faith tradition, the purest and highest form of it is to be a child of God, and that's to make peace. And here's the beauty. I have discovered when I'm oriented towards peacemaking, I find more peace in my own life. When I start getting pissed off at everybody, whether it's ISIS and the Jews and the Palestinians and the this and the that, even though I may think I'm actually right in all these areas, all I get is less and less peace. All I get is more and more cranked up. All I get is less and less pleasant to be around. More I get is disruption in my life. And then if I actually act out on it, all I bring is more disruption and more chaos into the world. So next week we're going to talk a little bit more deeply on the steps of being children of God, peacemakers. All right? Now, as Maria has said, we are not taking offerings. I remembered. And I love that we don't take offerings. There are boxes at the back. There's the slot at the door. There's direct deposit, lots of things. And I'd like to say, because money is an issue, as we move forward in whatever time I have left, and I don't mean this in some ominous way, but I never take a day for granted, right or wrong. Whatever time I've got left, alive, being here, pastor, someone shared with me last week, like, there's a rumor out there. I'm like, what? There's a new rumor about you. Like, what? You're retiring. Okay, that's not a rumor. That's a wish. That's not a rumor. That's a constant wish. No. I'm not retiring. But I want to push the work of who we are as community forward in this community in a way that we become more streamlined and more practical and more beautiful in injecting good into our neighborhoods and our world and the people that we meet up against. And I'm really excited about that. I am. This is the direction that we're going. And there's a vision and there's a purpose and there's a necessity. And I'm excited. I'm more excited than ever to be pastor here. I'm more excited than ever to have the people that I have here and the direction that we're going, because I think for many people who are going to be on the receiving end of this, it's going to be awesome. But then here's the great news too. As much as we give away, it comes back and we're like, wow. Wow, right? That's where we're going, all right? So let me say a prayer and then we'll let you go. God, thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for peacemakers. Thank you, God, for the high calling that we have as human beings, image bearers, from the one that we follow, who says, make love, not war. Make peace, not strife. You are my children. You are the peacemakers in the world, and you will be blessed. Thank you, God, for the blessing that comes from blessing others, God. Thank you that we need to remember and ask questions about where's the corner in my life that I'm taking it all from me? Where's the corner of my field that I'm not leaving for others in need, orphans, widows, immigrants? Where am I so much about mine, and I don't realize the more I call mine, the less I actually have? God, I'm looking forward to doing this inventory of my own life daily, because I know that it not just makes peace in the world, it makes peace in me. God, we all want that. We want that. I want peace. I want shalom. I want wholeness. I want to feel integrated and whole. Oh, yeah, this is good stuff. We're looking forward to this. Thank you for this community of faith that we have together. Thank you for the high calling you've given us. Thank you for being together. Thank you for all the blessings. We are grateful, and we will do better to remember it. In the beautiful, redemptive, restorative, hopeful, resurrected name of Jesus, we pray. May the Lord bless you and keep you in peace. Amen. We're done.